Welcome to the fourth episode of the Nonstop Podcast with Pooja. With me as my fourth guest, I have the very lovely Chloe. And today's episode is a bit more different, and it's a bit of we have a beauty with brain situation here. And by that I mean Chloe is going to teach us about just the basics, or tell us, you know, or for those who already know, kind of like put in more light on how data works, how AI works, and all the cool things that she's been doing in this space. So first, Chloe, let's talk about your snobbish school degrees. Chloe was an Oxford/Cambridge university and graduate. So how was it there, and what did you do at these schools really?
Yeah, so I did about 2 years of sixth form in some place near Oxford, and then I did 4 years of University of Cambridge. So I've got to be honest, they were probably some of the four hardest years of my life. It was a lot of stress, a lot of work. Whoever tells you it's easy is lying. It's definitely not easy. It's just, yeah, I think it really teaches you that, I don't know, the stress maximizing in life and how to handle it. So I think you meet a lot of like-minded people, you learn a lot. It's very fun in that sense, where there's always some new discoveries, but also they kind of push you very far, where they try and see, you know, how far can you go, not in just learning, but also in just like time management, you know, like balancing life, etc. So I think overall, it was a very good experience. I probably wouldn't do it again because of the stress, but I genuinely loved being there.
Yeah, but I think I need to ask you another question on going to these big schools. Like, So who do you really meet at these schools? Do you know of anybody that you did come across who was an already a mentor for you, or do you have a peer who's made it to, I don't know, Forbes under 30 record? So what was your kind of like sense of inspiration or sense of like kind of mentorship in Cambridge?
I think you meet a big variety of people. So I haven't met anybody in the Forbes under 30, but I think there's a lot of people who you learn from come up quite a lot. So for example, my current flatmate, actually, I met in Cambridge, and she has such a resilient mentality where she's gone through a lot of things in life, and just seeing that resilience really inspires you to, okay, something's got you down, but you know, you get back up, you keep going, you know, you keep working hard. So that's like one person that I met who really inspired me. And then everybody else, I know people who did law, I know people who did, you know, maths, people who did natural sciences. There's a lot of varieties of people who then go on to either do more research, which I very much admire, because I don't know how they can just keep putting all of that effort into, you know, just researching something that's completely new, completely out of the blue. And then there's others, such as my lawyer friends, who would come home at 1 to 2 a.m. And I just think, how do you do it? You know? So I think the biggest mentors I kind of had have those who keep going, those who really have that resilient mindset, who won't give up, who really believe in what they're doing. And that's really inspiring, just people who really believe in their mission.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we need to keep going as well. And but yeah, now let's just deep dive into your actual tech brain. So what do you do? And so we are at your office.
Yep.
So what do you do here, and how did you get here? Did you study mathematics, or what did you study at uni, and what got you here, and just general about what you've been up to?
Yeah, so if we go right back at the start of the journey. So I was starting uni, I actually wanted to be a mechanical engineer. So I thought, you know what, I love space, but I don't really like the astrophysics side of it. I really liked the, you know, more of the building of the space shuttle. So I was like, I'm going to become a space engineer. So I want to do mechanics. And in my first year of university, I was like, nope, that's not for me. That's not what I wanted to do. So I kind of switched over into information and electrical engineering, which is still quite different to what I do now, because now I do programming. And so in the whole course, it was a lot of maths, it was a lot of theory. And in my third and fourth year of university, I really thought, you know what, I want to do something that's more applied. I really want to see what I do being used on a daily basis, and something coming out quite quickly. So, you know, not waiting 10 years for something to come out, but more waiting a few weeks. And so that's when I got into the software engineering side of things, where there's really that development of websites and apps, which is what my company currently does, and you deliver it quite quickly to the wider public. And so my company now, that's how I kind of came here, their name is Theatre UK. So they work on mobile app development, and right now we're expanding into data as well. So what usually happens is you have people coming towards us where they're like, oh, we have this idea of something we want to do, or we go to them and we're like, oh, we think there might be a gap in the market in what you're doing. And we kind of build the tool for them. We build the project for them. And I love that aspect of, you know, going from the ground up, where you come start from basically nothing up into something which is then released into production, and you can see like people using it. And it's amazing. So my current job here is, yes, I'm a tech lead, software developer, and a data engineer. You can tell it's a consultancy because I have multiple things in the title. But yeah, work on a huge variety of projects, which is quite fun.
I think all of this sounds pretty profound, and I just wanted to like deep dive into what really goes behind. I mean, from what I understand, that you deal a lot with data, you deal a lot with numbers. Yeah. So, I mean, for a fresher to just understand how artificial intelligence work. Data is a subject that, again, we can keep talking about, and it's very evocative. And now everybody is like, especially in the legal field, there's a lot of regulations on artificial intelligence. Yeah. Maybe even 2 years ago, artificial intelligence was still a very, you know, like an narrow subject. People are still conservative about using it in their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And today, if I ask anyone, they'll be like, yeah, of course I use ChatGPT. So how does it work for you? What kind of tools do you use? Do you ask ChatGPT any questions? Tell us a little bit more on that.
Yeah, of course. So I think it's quite interesting, because I remember when I first got into data, I asked exactly the same questions. Where I was like, what tools should I be using? What should I be, you know, building my data platform with, etc. And I came across someone who was a bit more, he'd been in the field for 10 years. And he told me, honestly, don't look at the tools, because tools become outdated very quickly. So everything that you see in the data environment, like, yes, you might be using, you know, X tool to do some integration, Y tool to do some visualization, etc. Those tools might not be there in 5 years. So the biggest thing to get started is try and understand what is it that's happening underneath the surface. What is this movement of data? You know, what are these transformations that are happening? Which services communicate with which? It's really important to understand the theory first before you use the tools. Because if you understand the theory, you know how the tool is being used, why it works, and also how to optimize it. So it's the same thing with ChatGPT. Of course, I use ChatGPT in my day-to-day work. But the biggest thing with using ChatGPT is understanding the response it gives you. Too many people make the mistake of, oh, ChatGPT told me to do this, let me just copy and paste it, and they just use it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the context that you do. You know, us as individuals, you know, you'll have a lot of law expertise, I'll have a lot of like data projects I've worked on, so you have a lot more context on the response. So ChatGPT should definitely be used as something that will help you, but it shouldn't be a replacement for your job.
Yeah, and understanding how ChatGPT works. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was built by a bunch of software developers who just thought that. So let us also know how much information is being fed on these platforms, like for it to replicate at, and I don't know, a millisecond or a nanosecond, you know. Mm-hmm. So tell us about like how it could, you know, also work in the future, and how developed is it going to get, and how accurate is it going to get. Like, and now, I mean, it's very certain that if somebody is, you know, copy pasting something from ChatGPT, it's so evident.
Yeah.
So will we have a more transparent level of accuracy, you know, in terms of like if with the growth of AI, mm-hmm. Do you think that growth is sooner rather later? Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely going to keep getting better because the main reasoning, so when you're looking at these models, so they're large language models, when you're looking at it, it's trained on a massive, massive data set. So I don't remember exactly the numbers of it, but it's got a lot of training data behind it that it's kind of being training for, it's optimized for. And also when you type things, you have context windows as well. So it's got all of this training data, but it's also going to see things that you've given it beforehand. So there's a subsection of, large language models and models in general, which is called prompt engineering. It's when you're optimizing the model to give you a more effective response based on the way that you're conversing with it. And that's really utilizing that context window that comes with it. So what's happening with all these models is they're getting better because they're having so much more training data behind it as well, among other things, you know, they're being optimized, etc. But just the amount of data that they're being trained on keeps growing. And so models are going to keep getting better. And the interesting thing you see now is people talk a lot about ChatGPT, you know, ChatGPT is amazing, etc. ChatGPT is a paid service. But then you also have all the open source large language models that are out there. So there's Mistral is coming up really fast, where they're releasing new models, which are, they haven't reached the level of GPT yet, but they're catching up. So, and those are things that are completely free to use. So that's what's quite interesting to see.
And yeah, I mean, for me, it's also a bit of like, you know, from a business point of view, I mean, all these open sources, how do they really profit from it? Like, I mean, going forward, we are going to have more advanced ChatGPT, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the premium version is going to be, you know, a usable, that a basic version. I mean,
yeah.
Probably we're not going to have to pay at all, you know, because most things are going to be open source. So what's your take on that? And how do you, as a tech industry, do you feel that there is any threat to you guys? I mean, if AI is to take up everything,
mm-hmm.
Because as lawyers, we're constantly debating, you know, how much is our jobs going to be taken away? Are we relevant? You know,
mm-hmm.
is it prone to any error at all?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering on the business aspect of it, what do you think about all of these being open sourced?
Mm. So I love open source. I think open source is the way forward because it really helps everybody in society contribute to something which is going to be more efficient, more effective. And also, the more people use it, the more feedback you get, you know, the more issues you fix, etc. So the open source community is amazing. It's great that it keeps developing. I'm definitely not scared of it. I'm a big advocate of things being open source. Now, open source tools, they don't solve everything. You still have that, you know, combination of based on your context, you're going to use tool A versus tool B, etc. And it's quite interesting when people go to say, you know, AI is going to replace us. I think my favorite quote I've ever heard is somebody saying, AI won't replace you, but people who know how to use it will. Because the idea is what we mentioned before, AI doesn't have all the context. It won't be able to make kind of these, that talk I was showing ADR, so architectural decision records, where you have multiple criteria that you're going to compare different tools against, and you have to have that critical evaluation of, okay, X is better than Y. Yes, we can make all of these like AI models get better, give better answers, etc. But they're still not going to have, you know, the wealth of experience that you yourself have seen at previous time, and they won't be able to say, okay, no, this part is wrong because based on this context, I know that this person feels strongly about this, and therefore my client's going to accept it. They don't have that complex context behind the answer that they're giving you. I don't know if that actually answers the question because it's so convoluted, but I think overall, my thought is open source is great. It's the way we move forward. It's the way that research keeps progressing and things keep improving. AI will make our jobs easier. It may replace certain very manual, very automatic jobs, but it won't replace all jobs.
Yeah, I think the paradox kind of, you've answered the paradox.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we can take your words and write it in a dissertation, but I will not hold you on it because it's open source to it. Yes. I mean, it's also fair to say that there's a lot of like you know, like tech jokes and like some of the that I have come across. And mm-hmm. like it's very interesting that, you know, people are constantly debating this aspect. People are like deep diving into it, and then they want mm-hmm. to know whether it's really the way forward or can we just mm-hmm. use it to a certain extent. And yeah, and what are the common tools in AI? Like, what do you feel like is the up and running for people to, like, I mean, you know, just for them to simply access it? I mean, of course, not the software developers, mm-hmm. but, you know, in a day-to-day life, what do you think are the more prominent AI tools?
So I think a lot of them are popping up, but they've only popped up in the last year or two, for example. So ChatGPT is the most common one mm-hmm. that people usually use. You also have a lot of models that are coming out. So, for example, like image recognition. So, you know, you give it an image like this is a cat, this is a dog. Those are models that are quite commonly used. There's one which I like using. I forgot the name of it, which is the equivalent of ChatGPT, but for references. So if ever you've tried using ChatGPT, it's really bad at giving you stats and giving you like these are the resources for it. There's one tool, I really forgot the name, but it does basically that, where you're like, oh, find me a stat about XYZ, and it will give you that stat. So that's really nice. So I think a lot of people, every time somebody has an idea of, oh, this will make my life easier, somebody will plug in AI to it and make it work. So I think that's quite the fun part to it.
And what's your favorite tool?
That's a good question. It's either going to be between Copilot or GPT. Okay. I think probably GPT, because I'm a massive introvert. I'm notoriously bad at writing emails. And so it really optimizes that part of it. So yeah, I think the good part with GPT is I can hide the fact that I'm a massive introvert.
Yeah, and so like every morning you're like, hey, how are you? So can you just fill me in on your best morning phrases? But yeah, I mean, tell us, what is Copilot for those who do not know what Copilot does or what Copilot is?
Yep. So there's GitHub Copilot. The idea is Copilot is being thrown up about everywhere, but on the GitHub version of it, the idea is it helps you complete, trying to make this as least tactical as possible. It basically helps you write your code, let's just say. So it's going to have the context of your code base. Of course, it's all in a safe environment. It's private. It's not going to be used to train models that another person can use. But it's very much that safe environment of, okay, I'm going to auto-generate your code based on what I've seen, based on what I think you're going to want to do, etc. So it's basically plugging in ChatGPT, but for developers.
Okay, I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I would like to have, I mean, of course, we use ChatGPT to some extent in our legal professions mm-hmm. as well, but not to an extent where I believe Copilot has been, you know, like stretched and organized and like crafted to perfection for you guys.
Maybe there's going to be a Copilot for lawyers.
I hope so.
to complete all documents.
I hope so. But I mean, it's just really interesting to just learn about these AI tools and what it could do. Mm-hmm. But like, just like going back to what you were mentioning in the beginning of this conversation, that you said that you work in a sphere where instant gratification is what got you here, and you like to just, you know, deliver things. So so what exactly do you pivot to your like clients, and do you develop apps for them, or do you just like work on, you know, a certain aspect of things? Mm-hmm. What really is the scope of work?
So I can't say anything specific because of all of the NDAs, but let me think. So we've done things across, my very first project was an e-commerce platform. So it was very fun because it was building a website for kind of somebody who had actually raised their own funds to bring this platform out. So that was built within the span of 6 weeks, which was quite cool.
Wow.
That was really fun. We also had kind of a project to do with more warehousing. It was like a warehousing management system. So it was much more, it was full stack, but it was internal to the company. It wasn't more user facing, so like external user facing to the company itself. So that was quite fun. Also, I think the biggest project I had was like a 1 year project on an airline backend migration. So they were migrating their whole system into a more modern stack. And I was working on the payment system. So I was migrating over the payment system from their old kind of monolith C# code base over to kind of the brand new serverless TypeScript code base. So that was quite fun. And right now working a lot more on data. So my last one was building a data platform to help some optimize some management and also enable the company to add AI on top of it. And my most recent project is a kind of a data audit. So I'm currently looking at their architecture, trying to see, you know, where can I optimize? And this is in the food industry, actually. It's quite interesting.
Wow. I mean, the only question that I can think of in converse to all that, exorbitant data that you're giving me is that,
yeah.
I mean, most often, you know, in Dropbox or like in Drive or any, you know, storage platforms,
mm-hmm.
you know, we kind of like, even if we get an unlimited subscription, it's only unto a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that this can be solved with AI? Because like, I mean, I'm sure there's cloud and like, everything is there to an extent, but is there something that you can assertively tell that, okay, this is infinitely going to be available in terms of storage and that can be done with AI?
I think AI isn't the end-all solution
yeah.
to kind of
yeah.
everything that's out there. So I think it will never solve a problem completely because storage, you still need like a physical server somewhere which is going to store your information, and that costs money because it's electricity, like you need to have those servers
yeah.
running, etc. There's always a cost associated to it. Now the thing that's where the use of AI could help is more to do with optimization. So it's kind of, you know, sometimes you've got a file in your drive you haven't touched in like 10 years, like do you still need it? Probably not. And at that point, you won't necessarily need AI to it. It could just be, you know, a simple analysis of what was the oldest folders, what's the biggest folders as well. I think Google does that quite well, where they're like, oh, these are some massive folders, maybe you should throw them away, etc. But there is that optimization where AI could contribute, you know, could, I don't even know if this already exists or if it's an idea of a product, but where it could do a balance of, okay, when was the last time it accessed the folder? Is it similar to other folders that you've accessed before? Could you need it again? No, in that case, should I throw it away? So I think AI can help with optimization, so reducing costs, but it won't eliminate costs altogether.
Not so it's kind of like a footprint that it like navigates and like puts it in, like, you know, give you that, okay, this is your reminder. But it's up to you to like kind of like work on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I also wanted to ask, like, what are the different kinds of like associations? And like, I mean, is there a whole new like world for the AI geeks? And like, what is that you guys are a part of? Like, is there a separate like socials that you have? Or do you just live on Reddit? what really is happening in this sphere of things?
To be fair, I'm more on the data engineering side, so I don't know
okay.
what the data scientists are up to, for sure. But I think what's really nice with the data science community is that it's a nice blend between the researchers and kind of people who work in industry, because everything to do with data science there's still a massive amount of research going on, because there's all this optimization, there's all this training of new model, there's all the optimization of models as well that's happening. So that's still on the research front. And there's so many papers out there. So the research papers you could read, like, I don't even know if you'd be able to finish them all definitely not in a year, like with everything that gets released regularly every day. So there's a huge amount of research papers and conferences that go on just around data science as a whole. And then you've got those who apply it in industry. Now, the applications in industries are still quite iffy, let's just say. So what tends to happen is, you know, you try things out, but there's no guarantee it's going to work. So I think there is that community of like meetups, you know, articles, Reddit, all of that, where these discussions take place. But yes, I'm not speaking on the behalf of the data science community. I have no idea what you guys are up to, but that's the impression I get from it.
Yeah, makes sense. And I'm just going to throw another word that, I mean, of course, I'm oblivious to. So what really is your thought process on blockchain? I mean, I'm not sure how relevant it is.
Yeah.
But it's only fair for me to ask that.
Yeah, so I'm not going to dig too much into it because it's not something that I've regularly used either. But there's a big debate on whether blockchain is dying or not. So a few years ago, I think you saw it everywhere. You saw like the application of blockchain, like, oh, you should use blockchain in your applications, etc. That's really started to die off. So it's one of those things which was like a big peak of everybody wants to do it. And then kind of that momentum died down and it's applied a lot less nowadays. So personally, obviously, I haven't actually seen blockchain being referred to in maybe over a year at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I assume as a tech nerd, that was a very important doctrine. So
yeah.
Now that we've got that off, I also wanted to I'm saying also a lot,
yes.
But there is just too many things. It's like a network of things that I have to ask out. In terms of just regular understanding of how data works,
mm-hmm.
What would you say in very simple terms or words?
So to just kind of give a preamble to that, people often think that data solves everything. They're like, if I apply data, my problems are going to be solved. If I apply, data will just appear, data is there, etc. So the analogy I really like to use is data as a river. So there in a river, you have the source, you've got the river itself. The river might branch off into different directions. There might be fish in the river. You have to go fish them. There might be other things in the river that you can use. Like there's also, if you take water from the source, you might be able to drink from it. All of these different cases, the river can be used for something. So firstly, the river has to have a source. It has to originate from something. Same thing with data. It needs to originate from something. You can't make data out of nothing. So that's the first thing to it. Then you've got the river itself. So you can potentially deviate the river. You can split it off. You can make canals. So that's where, you're utilizing your data. You might be transforming it into something. You might be branching it off into different domains of your company. You've got, let's take the airline example, you've got the payments, you've got, the customer acquisition, you've got all of these. They might be wanting different parts of that data stream. Then you've got, there's fish in the river, you want to go fishing. You actually have to do something to extract that information and turn it into something useful. Or, maybe you've got like a mill that's also using the water, etc. So the data's there. The data can be split into streams. But then you have to actively use that data for something. So that's kind of the data visualization aspect of it. Or you might even have some transformation into something that's useful. So to summarize, river analogy, source, splitting into different domains, utilizing it for something else. Data, source, different domains use that data. There's that transformation, so the extraction, transformation, and then there's the visualization aspect of it. So that's kind of the analogy that I like to use.
I think that was a very, very flowing analogy, if I may say so. Also, I'm just curious in terms of how, privacy is a huge thing in today's times and world, and like not just personal privacy, but also data privacy.
Yeah.
And so what do you think in terms of like so much open source tools being out there, or just like open source access and AI tools which are easily accessible? And if, for example, if I am to create something that I'm using an open source tool with, will I be eligible to make it proprietary to myself? Or do you just think that these are just, some kind of commodity that you use in your business?
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's just a mere services that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, the question is, do you categorize yourself as a service provider, or do you categorize yourself as a proprietor to some kind of knowledge how?
Mm-hmm. So when you are using open source tools, it's always clear whenever you use it. So if you take, let's say like Airbyte, for example, you've got... It's open source. You have to then deploy it, or you use their own hosted version of things. Now, it's always respectful to the community to say when you've used something, because it's very much trying to give themselves, that visibility of, by the way, I'm using this tool. So even when you have your own architecture that might combine multiple open source tools, you usually look at the README and it's got, listed, I'm using these sort of open source tools. In terms of that kind of privacy and making sure data remains, within your organization, the thing that's important is that whenever you're using something open source, you've got to deploy it somewhere. You have to have an infrastructure that will host it. And that infrastructure is what needs to be secure. So if you're deploying it in the cloud, you need to make sure that you've got, the correct configuration to just make sure that you've got no risk of a data breach or anything like that. So I think your infrastructure is exceptionally important. But I think to answer the question directly, It's when you use open source tools, the reason that they're open source is to make sure that everybody can use them. It's always good to give credit to them when it is due, but you're integrating it into a product that you then develop.
Which I assume is proprietary, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Like then, okay. So you will classify yourself as a service provider.
Mm-hmm. If I understand the full word of it, probably, but I've not had the same definition of it in my mind.
All right. I'm totally fair if I ask you some fun questions after all that heavy loaded information that I try to like instill and like, you know, play along and flowingly understand things.
My brain's busting
So tell us, what does Chloe read? Like, what does she read? Like for leisure, other than data and all the research papers and the conferences and all the hustling. Because this, again, is a podcast about women, for women, and how cool you are and what you do in a very non, threshold for cool. So what do you read in general? What really, like, it could be like, I mean, I'm always, like, you know, interested in something really sporty. And I do, a mind-numbing work where I just, like, focus on analytical aspect of life and things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what is your, you know, kind of like escape to life and things?
Oh, escape in life. I think I've got a lot of different escapes. I think usually reading is my escape, where I oscillate between fiction and nonfiction. Mostly because I feel guilty if I read too much fiction, and I'm like, no, I need to self-improve somehow. I need to read some sort of nonfiction. But I think at the moment, the biggest thing that's taking up my mind, my time is actually running. So I do a lot of half marathons. And recently with my partner, we've started a 16, 18 week plan to improve our PBs on half marathons. So according to the guide, according to the book, if I stick to this 18 week plan, I should hopefully be able to run a half marathon in an hour and 45 minutes. We're going to see if that's happened. I don't know how much I believe in it, but we'll see if the sticking to the process hopefully works.
You've collected a lot of data on that, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it will fall in place. So you are into running, and I assume, are you into any run clubs or...
I wish. I think the problem is just finding the time.
Yeah.
It's like by being busy all the time. It's like either you find it in the early morning or in the evening. In the evening, you're so tired when you get home. I feel like even we're talking about optimization of I think even when I'm running, I optimize. I like run to the office and run back from the office.
So
then I make sure, you know, using my time efficiently so I can sleep longer.
Makes sense. And have you done any marathons? Are you preparing for one?
So I have done a marathon. I think I've done 8 half marathons or something like that so far.
Oh, wow.
I'm hoping to do a marathon next year, but I feel like I have a very short attention span. So even if my fitness level will allow it, I don't know how much my attention span will allow me to do it.
I truly understand that. And what are the different, I mean, where have you run these half marathons? And have you ran them all in the UK or,
Okay, let's see if I can remember all of them. So my very first one was the Cambridge Half Marathon. That was maybe one year ago, actually. So that was my first one. Then I ran the Royal Parks one. Then there was the Amsterdam Half Marathon. Then there was... there was a Richmond Half Marathon. There was a Rome Half Marathon. Actually, it's 6 Vienna Half Marathon.
Wow.
6 of them.
I mean, that's very diverse. So, I mean, if your plan works out, I will take out the data on doing the half marathon in an hour and 40 minutes, because that's probably my 10-15K speed on a marathon. So, well, that would be useful information.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Chloe, it's like I always say, it's to every great mind is you know, something that's that they absolutely love to do, apart from the things that they are, you know, really involved and they're forced to do. So what's your favorite book or what's your favorite movie?
Oh dear. that's a very good question. I think with my favorite book, if this was me 2-3 years ago, I'd try and give you a very sophisticated answer and say, you know what, I really like things like, I don't know, War and Peace or something like that. I think now I've gotten much better with my comfort level and will tell you that I love rom-com. I genuinely love rom-com.
Well, there's no shame to admit it. Exactly. I'm in awe of people who do admit it, right? It's absolutely nice. When I go back from work and I'm like, I'm stressed and I'm thinking all the time, I want to watch something funny or absolutely romanticizing some ridiculous aspect of life. So,
yeah. Exactly. Yep. So I will admit, I love rom-com. I think in series, I love watching Friends. It's so much fun. It's so relaxing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think years ago, I'd always feel so self-conscious when I admitted it, because people always expect you, I think especially in Cambridge, people always expected you to say some sophisticated book that you're reading.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I just like, you know, the minimal thinking. Minimal
thinking like famous physics or quantum science or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
So what's your favorite rom-com?
So, I love books, for sure.
Yeah.
I always forget the name of the I always forget the name of the writer. She's the one who wrote Bridgerton.
Ah, okay.
But I think it's Julia Quinn. But I don't think her best books were Bridgerton. She has some much, much better books than that. I highly recommend, if you think the series good, the books are even better.
Okay, so you gave whoever is listening a scavenger hunt of there is more than... you know, Bridgerton with this author. So yeah, maybe we'll find that out.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, so Chloe, with that thought, I would like to say that I hope that, you know, you live in your rom-coms, but create more data and do more artificially intelligent things in your life. And I wish you all the very best. This was an excellent session. And I hope those who are listening learn something about data, something about AI tools, and they will, you know, have their own use in their own way. But yeah, it was lovely chatting with you, and I wish the very best for your half marathons and everything else that you're doing. And thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.